Is it still just you and me?
Yeah, she says still wrong, so I just texted her the number.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
I wonder if she dialed into the listen-only call.
I guess it's possible.
We'll have it now, because I gave her the number, 515-739-1034.
Yeah, that's correct. And then Michael might be doing the same thing, but hey, it works. They'll figure it out. They'll get here sooner or later.
Michael may be delivering.
She may be.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello?
There's Michael.
There's Michael.
Hi. I'm looking for
headed.
For my earbud.
There we go.
Ha! Okay, everybody's here. You're probably going, why isn't Dell here? That's because his daughter, Mesa, went to the hospital, and I don't think it's a big thing, but he didn't want to, I sent him off. So go ahead. I could do this by myself. I'm a big girl, and everybody will understand, and so off he went. So.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. Exactly.
How a silent retreat went, though.
He loved it. It was awesome. Yeah, he had a wonderful time, and I'm pretty sure he'll be going back more than one time a year. He'll probably go back a couple times a year. He loved it. So, yeah, can't you imagine just being there by, you know, at that place, just following your whatever you wanted to do. He walked all day, and he said there was Kathy, you'll love this. He said there was a priest there doing a retreat, not a silent one, but he was walking, and I may have mixed this up, and he's probably going to say I mixed two people in one, because there was a bunch of people doing this kind of thing, but I think it was the priest that he said was walking barefoot. And he would see him like way far away, walking, walking, walking. Then he'd come in and have something to eat, and then he'd be gone again. So they had a few discussions. He did the last day he talked, so they could talk to some of the sisters and the people. So, yeah, he loved it. It was awesome.
Where did he go for it?
To the
Marina.
Gathering. Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, right there. Oh, how fun.
Yeah. It was really cool. Okay, so Kathy, you're reading the, you know, the thing.
Yeah. It's like, I can't wait till Kathy reads it. But, you know, I'm just going to say this, so this is the way I would read it, is if I were reading it in a way that made sense, to me it would be to know that revelation leads to revolution with resolution. That's the only way I can get it, is that revelation, it has to be revealed first, and then we make change with resolution. So that's my version. So now
okay.
I'll read this version.
Okay.
To know that revolution with resolution leads to revelation. To be the spiritual revolution with an individual, moment by moment, resolution to be the action of truth.
All right. Thank you. Works however you want to read it. But Michael has a version. Michael, do you want to share your version?
Oh, cool.
Of what? Of what are you talking about? Of the way
the
to
R's.
Read it?
No,
huh?
The R's.
Oh, the R's. Oh, yeah, the R's, of course. Okay, so I have three R's for all of us who've been through so much school. We get to do it again. The three R's. So everybody together, when I ask you to I'm going to ask you to do some action, okay? And I'm going to ask you to do three actions with the three R's. So the first action has the word reject. And at that point, you're standing up, your feet are apart, and you have a hand out in front of you, and the palm is sticking straight out, and your arm is locked, and that's called reject. Are you doing it?
Mm-hmm. Like a stop sign?
Oh.
Yeah. And you know what it makes me think of? It makes me want to sing the song, Stop in the Name of Love.
Yes.
We
right.
did a belly dance with that. It's all about the bass. And we have that movement, that hand movement, where we
all
turn
right.
around, we make a 180, and we go, Stop. And one of the girls is perfect at it. So, yes, I'm going to channel Denise and go, Reject. Okay, got
yeah.
it.
Yeah. All right. Now you need both hands for the next R.
Oh, man.
And what you do is you put both hands out in front of you.
Yeah.
And you put them together.
Yeah.
And then you turn them over. So you reverse.
Okay.
All right. We reversed.
You
so
reversed.
Rejected and reversed.
And reversed. And now, after you've done those two, you get to do a happy dance. You put your hands above your head and you rejoice. Rejoice. All right.
Thank you, Michael. I
You're
love
welcome.
That. Some
You're
more
welcome.
R's to roll if we feel like
yes.
rolling.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, we can go however we want to. We're talking about imagine what if and obsessive vigilance. So I figure you guys all have some amazing imagination and vigilance stories you want to share or talk about. Michael and I had a great bunch of talks, this great talk this morning about vigilance and habits. So we're on a roll. Hey, another R. We're on a roll.
On a roll, exactly.
Talking about these things. So who would like to start with your ideas?
Well, I can start because it ties in with it so much that I found out that, you know, I have a very strong resistance, another R, to doing some things. And I also found out how uncomfortable that strong resistance makes me feel. It makes me feel unhappy. And I don't feel comfortable doing it anymore. I don't feel comfortable resisting. Or in other words, my resistance is to not take any action. And I don't feel comfortable doing that anymore. It's like... I don't know. It's like weird. I've never felt that before, but I have recently, and I think that somehow, you know, my understanding of who I am and what I'm supposed to be doing has shifted so that I can recognize that the resistance that I'm hanging on so closely to is really putting me in a very uncomfortable place and a place I don't want to be in. And so I can let go of that habit. That's it.
Yeah. It's a big thing. It's a huge thing to when you finally feel that feeling of, oh, and you guys are going to have so much fun doing the habit class because that kind of goes along with this. But I'm really grateful that you're feeling that. And if all of you have noticed that you can hear Michael tonight, this is because Michael took some action, right, Michael? And
yes.
What did you fix?
Well, I fixed my phone. I mean, I really fixed my phone because I've been trying actually to fix it for quite a while. A long time ago when we were, you know, doing a project, you know, last year when we were doing the surrender project, I was trying to fix my phone and I sat there and the guy told me, do this and do this and do this. And it had been that way since then. And now the phone got to the point where I couldn't make a call out and I couldn't receive a call. I mean, it would just drop the call. So I finally got somebody from AT&T after trying about three times. So I finally got the correct tech section and they called me actually. And they talked to me and they said, okay, here's what we do. And they went through it. And I had to make one change on my phone and that did it. But I would never have known the change to make without that. But that wasn't that great. I'm so happy because
persistent
it was so
action.
I thought I was going to have to get a new phone and blah blah blah. So
that was obsessively vigilant, Michael. Taking action.
It was
being obsessive. Yeah,
you're
that's
right.
A perfect example.
I didn't think about
yeah.
it that way, but man, that was obsessively vigilant.
Yeah, that's really
yeah.
cool.
Well,
all right,
I think I'm a lot more that way too because I'm not going to let anything get in my way of much anymore.
You can tell I'm smiling. It's like, yay! All right.
Okay.
Well, you come back on if you want to tell some more stories.
No,
so let's hear what.
There's
let's
no,
see what
there's
Jet,
nothing more. Let's
oh,
go.
Oh, you
I
never know.
Might be.
Let's, yeah, there might be more. How about you, Jet? Oops.
Am I on or
now
off?
We don't have her. Oh, there she is.
No, am I on or off?
You're on.
Okay. Don't have my glasses on because I had to hit that. You said Jet, and it was like, oh, no, where's the mute button? Because I'm on the phone instead of the Skype. Wow. That was like my computer, Michael. It took me a year to get my computer fixed, or 7 months, something like that, because nobody believed me that, you know, my new computer wasn't doing the right things. It was not behaving or not doing this or not doing that. And, you know, you're supposed to have this blah, 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 and it's supposed to work great, and it's supposed to be this, and this one said this, and that one said that. And they even gave my tech, my IT guy, the runaround when he did it, and it was just through both of us being persistent. We finally got to the right person, and they ran it right through, called it a lemon, and replaced my computer.
Oh.
So it just, you're right, it just takes persistence and obsessive vigilance to really, you just have to keep going. You can't believe that lie that, you know, it's something you're doing. So this is going to be interesting. You mean you're not going to get dropped like 5 or 6 times a night on a call anymore?
She's actually at home.
That's
too.
Right.
It'll be so exciting because, you know, Michael got dropped again, you know. So all of this time when you were thinking it was being in a sketchy area, maybe all of this time it's just been the phone just literally dropping you in and out and in and out. That'll be fabulous.
Right. Well, it is a little sketchy area, but there is some coverage. There's enough coverage.
But I think that's great. That's wonderful. I was reading, which I thought I missed half the reading, which would not be entirely unusual because it's not beyond my capabilities to stop halfway through an assignment and not remember that I stopped until it's almost too late. But I did, in fact, finish the reading assignment. I did, in fact, read Chapter 10. Obviously, I read the Imagine What If, because that's where I came up with the, you know, let's do the forum again. But I forgot that one of my favorite things, which is the 4 stages of hypnotism, is in the Obsessive Vigilance chapter, and I absolutely did see that. And also, this is a new book, so I know I read it because I got highlights through here. So, and I'm really glad I highlighted this one because this has kind of been my theme over the past couple of months. You write on page 113 in chapter 10, Becca, there is no greater feeling than hearing the same thing we have always heard and hearing it so differently that the world shifts into brighter hues. I think that's beautiful. And that's been that theme that's been running through everything as we read Living in Grace over again. And I honestly, I couldn't tell you how many times I've read the book. I couldn't. And I mean, I'm not even joking about it. I could not tell you how many times I have read Living in Grace. Not only picking it up and finding a spot or doing this or doing that, you know, just in sketchy parts, but actually picking up the book and reading it from cover to cover. I don't know how many times I've done that. As many times as I've done that, I have found something new to that I swear, you know, I have never seen before, even though I've read the book. And it's a short book. It's not it's not an epic book. It's not a centuries long saga of, you know, the various and sundry families and their 17 different generations. It's you know, a couple hundred pages. So I had to have read these things before, but I think that the only thing that I can say for that is that even if I read it, I didn't see it quite in that way. I was at whatever stage I was at, and I feel, I've been going around today saying I'm very blessed. And really feeling that way and not just telling myself that because I'm in a nya-nya mood or whatever and I have to remind myself. I'm actually feeling very blessed. Meeting Louise Penny was, talk about a highlight of my life.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful. And Scott waited in the parking lot for 3 hours for me while I went through that.
Wow.
Even if he had said yes, buy me a ticket, I could not have it. It was sold out. They sold 500 tickets, and there were 500 people or more there. And it was an amazing experience, especially with kind of the way I've been feeling over the past several months. About, you know, every time I write, I feel that I want to write better. I want to write more. I want to do this. I want to do that. And she just gave so many wonderful examples of, you know, where she came from and how she got there and what she's been through. And, you know, laughing the whole time, just laughing at herself. And talking about her massive failures and laughing through them and the failures of the people that she worked with, and that they would get up the next day and walk down the sidewalk proud no matter what happened during whatever artistic performance happened the night before, good, bad, or indifferent. And it was such because I find her so honest in her presentation, that I took everything that she said to heart. And it gave me such a feeling of gratitude and of being in the right place at the right time to hear everything that she had to say. It was wonderful. And then on Friday morning, to get positively yelled at by Becca for an hour. It was just, it was so perfect. And
did you really
do that,
Becca?
At me for an hour. She
I really
yelled
did.
At me for an hour. Yeah, she did. She really did. And
well,
she stopped and said, give me more. You know, give me more.
I didn't raise my voice and yell at her. No,
she yelled at me. But you know, she had that mother voice going.
I gave her shit, is what
yeah,
I said.
She did. She did. She gave me pepper for sure. But I'm not comparing myself in any way, shape, or form to anybody else, because that's one of the things that I'm vigilantly giving away. But as I see other people's circumstances within my local community, as I see what their viewpoint appears to be, when I see what their perception, their state of mind, and their perception, just their perception is, I said to Scott tonight, I don't know whether to feel blessed that I am who I am or blessed that I have you. But I think it's both.
Aw.
And it's just that I'm seeing things through very different eyes. Very, very different eyes. And when I start to slip back into old jet mode, then I actually catch myself at it. So
Rebecca yells at you.
Rebecca yells at me, you know, which just like sets everything back in motion again. It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot for a minute there. You know, can you yell at me some more? It hurts so good. Becca told me how it was on Friday, and I am eternally grateful to her for doing that. Thank you.
I don't think anybody else would have enjoyed it yet, though.
INTJ. It's like, yeah. You know, ripping down. You didn't push back the curtain. You ripped it down and tore it to shreds. That's what you did. And I can never put that effing curtain back up again. And only somebody with our particular bent towards that INTJ thing, that analytical, yeah, all right, kind of thing, you know, right 2x4 between the eyes kind of truth, could really appreciate that, you know. So thank you. I wouldn't appreciate it from anybody else but another INTJ, I'll tell you that much.
I had told Dell the night before, Jet's going to get it tomorrow. And he said, oh, because I never talked to him that way because he would not appreciate it or any of the other two people on this call. But it's like, Jet's going to get it. So when Jet started talking, I went, all right, you're getting it. That's it. There's no more of that going on here. So thank you, Jet. I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
I'm so glad you enjoyed my tirade over you. Are you still black and blue? Have you started to turn green yet?
Oh, boy. Michael and Kathy are probably thinking, oh, my God, why would anybody enjoy that? I promise I didn't raise my voice one moment.
And she also didn't swear at me.
No. I didn't swear and I didn't raise my voice. I just said, that's enough of that.
Yep,
so.
This is the truth.
It must have been like a good cleansing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather have that than a colonoscopy, I'll tell you that much.
You expect me to choose today and I right now? And I said, I do.
I said, that's a rhetorical question, right? She said, no, it's not. You need to choose now. And I was like, holy shit, she means it.
So are you going to share what you chose, or is it still in the budding stage?
It's still in its budding stage, so I'm not sharing. Or I might share on Wednesday in Insiders, because it kind of falls in with Insiders.
Okay.
And I might not have anything else to say on Insiders, so I need to save something for content.
Cool. All right. Well, yes, sometimes those little seeds have to grow a little bit before you can share, so no problem with that. All right. So, Kathy, your turn, my dear.
Hell no. I'm terrified. I'm not going
to
say a word.
No, it would never work the same with you. Uh-uh.
Yeah, you know it. But I then, you know, when you guys first said that, my immediate response was to hang up, literally. Hang up. Hang up. Hang up.
Hang up, hang up quick.
Yeah. Just, I mean, it was just this gut response. Hang up. And that, you know, then you go, I went through all kinds of different thoughts about it. But, yeah, it's, and I think it is one disposition, so to speak, to another where it works, and that's the common language. And so
right.
then it's all done just as if it would be a conversation with us, but in our own language. The same
right.
conversation, it's just in our own language.
Different.
So,
right. And
yeah.
Becca happens to be really good at reading who could handle something, whose preference would appreciate that and whose would not.
What preference am I speaking to? Yes, years and years and years of financial planning with everybody from engineers to hippies. Yeah, so, yeah, who's going to – you have to communicate in the language that works. And I love all of them. I think everybody's style is fantastic. It would be like saying I only wanted – one kind of flower in my garden. I wouldn't. I love the diversity. So I'm grateful that I get to work with so many people of different styles so that I get to be that too, which is really what it is. You get to be that in that moment.
Right. Yeah.
So I get to be a rose and a daisy and a pansy and a violet. Okay. So, Kathy, no, I would never do it that way. So, yeah.
And
although
it scares me, because then I think, oh, but I bet she's wanted to.
No,
you know?
No, I haven't. Although Dell has often, but I have to admit that I have learned a lot from Dell, because I was not aware until I met Dell that sometimes I was talking more in an INTJ, and you guys have heard me do it, and then I go, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that.
Yep.
I've heard,
yep.
And because I was not aware of the immediate response that people felt when I was just having a regular conversation. You know, I was just talking like I was talking like a regular person, and then he'd say, you know, the way you said that doesn't feel very good. I went, what? Are you serious? Like, so that is definitely, but not awareness. It was a non-awareness on my part. So I think I've gotten much better, even though it still slips out at times. And I have to apologize. I look at Dell and go, oops, sorry. I didn't mean it that way. I'll say it the way I really meant to say it. So, you know, you all do it. You all learn to talk to each other in ways so each person can hear it, right?
Yep.
Works for all of us. So don't hang up, Kathy, and no, I've never wanted to talk to you like I talked to Jet. But Jet
Alrighty.
Will not hear me. But Jet would not hear me if I didn't talk to her in her style about the things we talked about. Just
mm-hmm.
as you wouldn't hear me if I talked to you like I talked to Jet on Friday morning. You wouldn't hear me. She wouldn't hear me if I did it the way she... And Jet won't mind me saying this. If I don't talk to Jet that way, sometimes she'll hide for a long time.
Or longer.
So this was like, you're done hiding, Jet.
Yep.
Come. It was a come to Jesus meeting is what it was.
Come to Jesus meeting. Well, I wouldn't have heard you because I would have hung up.
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
And you should have. If I started talking to you like that, you should hang up on me.
Say, go call Jet. She's the one who appreciates that.
Well, I'm basically woefully unprepared on this. I skimmed these because I was supposed to have an hour today. That was my scheduled time, read the two chapters after my last directee left, because I had 1 hour before the call. She didn't leave until 22. She came at 2, didn't leave till 3:40, and I hadn't eaten lunch. I mean, I hadn't eaten food. My stomach was grumbling through my session with her. So I decided to feed myself, and then I just skimmed the chapters. But as I, right when I got into the imagine what if, And this, and I don't know how to describe this picture, but the picture came to me that it's that when we do that, we're just really thinking with the mind of God, you know, so that visualization is when we're thinking in human ways. And you described that really well at the beginning of the chapter, you know, taking apart the dance or where every cut in the furniture was going to be and all of that. And then you did say you got better results when you did the imagination rather than visualizing at all. But it seemed as if visualization is when we think it from our own thoughts. And imagination is when we open to God's mind dwelling in us, which it does, you know, in some, however you want to translate that into your awareness of God. But it was like the picture I got was, you know, when you, the old single lens reflex cameras, when that lens would open, you know, and so it, because it was like this, do you guys know what I'm talking about, what that lens looks like when it's closed?
Yeah.
And then how it opens up, you know, that was it. And so it is if our mind opens up, and then it's not even that we're imagining it, it's that which is there we see. So that's what I was thinking. And so, and I don't know if that's clearly expressed or whatever, but it is in my mind because I can see it. And that's all I'm thinking about today, because that's all I've had two directees today, both for quite lengthy sessions. And so I'm into that sort of, you know, God thinking stuff. But so it seemed like, well, that's what imagination is. It's just that which is already present, you know, and you described that in your book too. So, and then I thought, well, obsessive vigilance is the same thing. It's a moment-by-moment opening of that lens. It's a moment-by-moment opening to that divine mind. And so that was sort of my take of it. And then I started thinking, well, maybe in a way, maybe in a way, all of these chapters are that, in one form or another, because that's all we're saying. Back to one, face and replace, angel ideas, our ideas from God, the four essential questions, you know, running, hiding, waiting, lying. It's just, no, open to the God that is. And so that's it. That's all I got there.
Well, I'm glad that you got there, because I think I like that visualization of the open lens. That really makes a lot of sense, that opening to truth.
And I think that's the essential question, because we fall flat on our faces when we're not open. And we can describe it in different ways. The hypnotism, definitely not open, you know, lost in our own expression. So it's trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledge him and he will direct your path, in all your ways acknowledge her, it, whatever. But you know, it's that, don't lean on your own understanding, don't stay lost in our own world. We won't be able to have any imagination, any ideas, receive any angel ideas, get out of the hypnotism if we rely on our own thoughts. They're useful for some things, but even knowing where to put the cuts in wood is because there's a bigger principle that applies, that in order to get these pieces to go together this way, you have to do it in that way. So it's an openness even there. But the dance I can see is steps or dance, you know. Steps or dance. And I was thinking about it as I was driving down a spiritual direction and thinking about the difference between religion for going through the motions, people who practice their faith as a, you know, it's skin deep, and then, mm-hmm. you know, people who have faith, who operate from, not from themselves, but from the center that is God, best that we can. So, anyway.
Are you still hungry?
Day. It was full of synchronicities and so forth. And I'm happy to say that the brand new directee who came at the end of the day and talked for a long time wants to come back. So, you know, I got a new client. Yay.
That is yay. Fantastic. You don't have to, do they always stay as long as they want, or is there a, that's
always
just like in the beginning?
Come and talk, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
They know it's basically an hour. Sometimes, you know, my directee that I've had for 4 years is now really paying attention to the clock. But, you know, it's God talk. I could do this all day. And so sometimes it does go over. I find that I have, when I have homeschooling students who come to my house, it's going to run over. It just, it does. It's a different feeling than when we're on the phone and, you know, kind of more aware of the time. I know when I meet with my spiritual director, I'm conscious of the time. You know, and
yeah.
Becca, when I have coaching with you, I'm conscious of the time.
Yeah.
But I'm more expansive when the people are coming to me. So it doesn't really bother me. All of a sudden she says, I think I'm over time. And I looked and it was like, oh, yeah, okay. I guess I won't read my chapters. But you can just give them. Yeah, but I'm not really good at throwing them out at an hour.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking of that, not you, but I was thinking about this week. I'm not quite sure how I got to this, but I was thinking about my teacher or practitioner, and I would go see her periodically, and I was thought about what it was like going to see her, because I would go to her office and she'd have me come in, and I thought about the process of what we did while I was there, and I wondered to myself, how did I know it was time for it to be, I mean, there was a clock there, but she somehow always made it both warm and welcoming and clear about when it was over. And that's what I was thinking about. It had nothing to do with anybody at all, except for some reason Dorothy popped into my head, and I went, what is that? What was she doing that I knew that? So I don't have any answers. It's just kind of interesting that that's what it was, because we'd go to her office. Her office was in her home, and you'd go there and do your appointment thing, and what she had like a little thing that she would do. And then we'd talk, and then I knew it was time, and then I'd leave. And it was always exactly the hour, and I don't know how she did it. Anyway, it's not a big deal.
But I wonder if you did it.
True,
because you
may
be a person who's conscious of
the
time.
I am conscious
of
the time,
absolutely.
Yeah,
mindful of the time. And I know my sister Cecilia, when she would meet with directees or when she'd meet with me for supervision or whatever, she had a giant egg timer, you know what I mean, an hour egg timer, and she would turn it over. And there's part of me that just can't do that. I can't make it, okay, we're talking about God and we're going to do it for 1 hour. You know, it's just, everybody kind of knows it's an hour. If it's an hour 10, hour 15, I'm not really caring. And if it's after that, with the directees I have, we're on the chit-chat at that point. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So we're having fun just talking to each other. So it's no big deal. But this lady, she can talk. It's really fun. And she was in a 3-year program where they would go up to Oregon for her particular, you know, flavor of faith. But she was talking about this couple who came, and he was, he was Catholic, but he, you know, was coming to theirs, which is a Protestant denomination. And you know, he comes from New Mexico, and he comes with his wife. And I said, oh, is his name David Hoover? And is his wife Sharon? She says, yeah, I think it is. They were the presenters at our class on Saturday. I know David really well. So it was just so funny, you know, the tie-ins that this woman goes up to Oregon. And, you know, it's the same people. It's just the, you know, the God circuit people wandering around telling what they want to say.
The God
you
circuit
know.
People.
Yeah,
fantastic.
The God circuit.
Well, I was thinking today, I was putting something together when I was thinking about obsessive vigilance. Del and I have been watching, it's a show on Amazon called All or Nothing. And it is actually filming an NFL team. So the first season is the Arizona Cardinals NFL practice. And you would think, well, that can't be very interesting. But let me tell you how interesting. It's really interesting. It is extraordinary because you get to, it's a vision, they're showing behind the scenes how this team works as a team. And for me, I get so many inspirations by looking at things that I don't think I would be interested in so many different arenas and then pulling them all together. And this NFL program has been really watching the coach dealing with his students. And when I was talking to Michael this morning, I was saying one of the things that he did was, or does, when the team lost, when they were losing, only once did he get mad and yell at them. And then he berated, he said later, I shouldn't have done that. Instead, he says things like the guy fumbled, and he might say, what are you thinking? You know, he might do that, but he doesn't call them a loser or anything. But at the end, but in the locker room at the end, he says to them, I want you to feel what this feels like. I want you to live in this defeat. I want you to take it in and realize that we failed. And then tomorrow, we're going to let it go and we're moving on. But he wanted them to feel that. And I think that there were so many cool things, and I might tell you more of them. But this one, I really thought about what that meant was it wasn't avoiding the mistake. It was saying, this is what we did. This is what went wrong. I see that. I'm going to live with it. I'm going to get the lesson out of it. It's kind of like the thing in the Bible where whoever it is that the angel comes down and he says, don't leave me because I haven't got the whole lesson yet. That's not what he says, but basically. So that's what he's saying is get the lesson. See how it feels to fail when you have not been awake or aware and you haven't been paying attention. But then it's not about you. It's not. We're not going to beat you up. You're not going to beat yourself up. Tomorrow we're going to start again. There's no past. We're moving on. And I thought that was so good as an obsessive vigilance point of view. That they and the way they practice. Oh my God, the way they practice as obsessively vigilant about practicing, and it shows the different things that different people on the line, different kinds of exercises they do that I've never seen before in my life, and I think I know a lot of exercises, but they're doing specifically for the motion that they do and then the overall exercise. And then he has the different people on the team be the motivator. He's on one shows him talking to one of the quieter guys and saying, I need you to focus this team. And the guy says, but I'm not a rah-rah type. And he said, did I tell you to be a rah-rah type? I said, I need you to focus the players because that's what you know how to do. And it's just, and the end product of it that I really saw today was the way they talk to each other. And they say, the one guy said to, he's talking to his team and it said, we are one, and we have to act like we're one. We're not individuals playing. We are one. And I thought, that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to be, they all have individual skills, and they're all playing individual things in the team. I don't know the things well enough to, you know, the linebacker, the corner guard, the blah, I don't know all those things, but they're all playing a unique role in it. And if one of them doesn't play their role, the whole thing falls apart. So, but they're still seeing each other as one, that they have to work as a one team. And isn't that cool? I mean,
yeah,
and the practice
integrated movement.
Yeah.
Yes, all integrated.
Yeah, and the obsessively vigilant about being uniquely who they are and supporting each other and then playing as one. I mean, that to me, watching that show has been, oh, that's what obsessively vigilant looks like. It's not guilt or anger or upset or you know, the coaches, he says in one place that if we, well, he says you either win the ring or you don't. There's not an in-between, so that's what they're aiming for. But on a private conversation, he says, in the end, I'm not trying to make this into a great football team, although that's what I want to do. What I'll get the most pleasure out of is when one of these players comes to me years from now and says, you turned me into a great man.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great football player. So, but they're using football as the practice.
The medium.
The medium, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Plus, now I understand how it works a little bit better. Like, now I can appreciate the game better.
When you don't understand how the game is played at all, it's totally boring. It looks brutal. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand a whole lot of football until I, for whatever reason, I got fascinated with Tom Brady and the Patriots. And I think that the reason that I became that I actually started watching them and developed an interest was exactly that. You could actually witness that team work on the field.
Right.
You could actually witness it in action, and that's when it started to make sense to me, because to me it was like watching a really well-formed army. You know, they talk about, like, General Patton could put things together. Napoleon Bonaparte put together this incredible machine, you know, none of them are particularly pretty when you think about, you know, what they're doing. They're committing violence on each other, but even in football, especially in football. It's just when you look at it, when it all comes together, it's just like watching ballet.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Yeah.
And I think the part that... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I somehow don't think it's exactly like ballet.
The visual picture of the football players running into each other and the ballet dancers over here, they kind of look different to me. But
they
I know what
different,
you mean.
But it's just,
I know
it's,
what you mean. Yeah,
it's not so very
thing.
Different. Right. Watching,
yeah.
watching my neighbor Paul Crawford operate a backhoe was like watching ballet.
Mm-hmm.
It was like there didn't seem to be any difference between Paul and the machine. They all kind of blended together.
Yes, right.
One
right.
unit. And that's what ballet is to me, is that incredible harmony. It's beautiful symmetry. Obviously, I'm stumbling for words, so it's indescribable.
But it's the same kind of obsessive vigilance that they use to look like that.
To get there.
Same kind of practice, the same kind of dedication, the same kind of we follow these rules in order to be free and to be able to do these amazing things that no one else can do. I know none of you watch So You Think You Can Dance, but this year those dancers are they're so amazing. But you watch them and you think, what mindset did they get into that they can do the things that they're doing, because they do them, they dance 100 years ahead of what we did 30 years ago. And they're not anywhere close to what any of us were dancing like 30 years ago. And that sense of imagination, that you imagine you could do this, and then they can do it, and this is impossible. And I think it's that same quality of what we're talking about, imagining and obsessive vigilance going together hand in hand. And I just want to say the other thing about the football thing that I didn't really know, I mean, I kind of suspected but didn't really know, is the stuff that they don't show when you're watching the game. They show this of the coaches going over and chatting about things like, you're coming over for dinner on Friday night, or, boy, you have a great quarterback this year. You know, he is just, he's something else, isn't he? And, like, they're having a regular talk, and then they then they go play kick ass, and then they go over and hug each other and say, great game, and mean it. And I just didn't think I ever, I don't think I ever really appreciated that that was also a community bigger than just each team.
Than the teams just hating each other. Yeah, the great rivalries. Yeah, some of the most incredibly competitive games, football games, are between teams where the head coaches are really good friends and have been for years. You know, they have huge respect for each other, and you'll hear the players saying how much respect they have for the other members of the team. And then you see two brothers facing off against each other because there are two pro players who actually play against each other. They play on different teams and they play against each other, and they've met up time after time. So I can imagine what the dinner conversation is when they go home to visit mom and dad every once in a while. That must be really interesting.
That respect. Dalla told me the other day, I didn't see it, but he was watching a baseball game where one of the guys in one team caught a ball that when he caught it, he flipped over and fell into the opposing team's dugout. And it was such an amazing catch that both teams stood up and applauded him.
Wow.
So when you see something that's skilled, you know, you have that. So then you see behind it and say, oh, wow, you appreciate what it took, the obsessive vigilance it took to make a catch like that. So, I know, NFL,
really,
you would think.
That, you know, Becca, that is really a great example of your shifting your perception and finding the good in something that you don't particularly or did not particularly like, because you were not real fond of the idea of watching football with Dell last football season.
Oh, no, I've been watching with him for the beginning, but I don't watch it often. You're right. Mm-hmm. I like it. I always watch the Super Bowl with him, always.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch a little bit. But no, I didn't appreciate it as much as I do now that I have both heard a talk about NFL on a podcast through Star Talk. Neil deGrasse Tyson has a podcast on about the physics of sports, which is quite interesting. It doesn't sound like it would be, but it is. And they were talking about NFL players and then also watching this. I highly recommend the show. I know it seems like, why would you watch this? But it's really interesting watching these men, because I don't normally watch men things. Do you know? That's what we're saying, right? It's men who are learning how to be good men together as a team. I think it's been very interesting to watch that. And dancers, I'll leave it alone after this, but dancers, we'd always say, well, and actually there is some various proof on it, that as dancers we were in better shape than football players. And I have to say, after watching those football players, I don't know.
Well, there's a different kind of shape. Overall, your bodies overall were probably, as dancers, in better shape than overall football shape. But the football players, they do specific exercises to develop specific skills and specific body shape for what they do. I mean, when you think about the offensive line and how big they are, and the defensive line. I mean, look at Vince Wilfork. He's 300 pounds, you know. But when it actually came time to do it, he ran the 90 yards down the field when he intercepted a ball. It was like 4 or 5 years ago. And he was so excited because, one, he's a defensive player, but he plays on the line. His basic basically he looks like a bulldozer, and his job is to squash people. That's all he's supposed to do. He's not supposed to try and pick the ball off because he's too big to run the ball, everybody says. Well, he caught the ball. He was the only one available to do the job, so he ran the ball all the way from the other team's goal line, or from his own, you know, from his own end zone, right into the other team's end zone. And I mean, nobody's ever lived it down. He was like a little kid jumping up and down in the end zone when he got that touchdown. It was the funniest thing, when it was the most gratifying thing I've ever seen. But yeah, he was built for something else. Kind of like a draft horse is built for something else, not speed.
And that's a good example of that we can do what needs to be done.
No matter what.
No matter what, exactly.
Even if we are INTJs and can take the cosmic 2x4 between the eyes. Doesn't mean we have to deliver it to other people who would not appreciate it or might listen with a much softer, gentler touch.
Yes, and you don't need it very often, by the way, or ever, really.
Right, really. But sometimes if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes.
Well, see, here we are. We got talking about NFL players and obsessive vigilance and imagining what if, because we can use all those different skills in as we're practicing the things that we're practicing, because we're all kind of playing the game of life in a weird sense. So we have to be obsessively vigilant about becoming better at what we do and letting go of what we don't do well. So that was the big NFL story. Football. And Michael and Kathy are like, oh my God, I don't want to hear any more about football.
Oh no, I actually had a football story, but you know, we're over time, so. Oh no, yeah.
I don't know.
No, we're not.
Yeah, tell me the story.
It was Obsessive Vigilance, and it was in a book. I read it in a book called Masters of Success or something. So it was about, you know, success. But anyway, it was the only story I remembered out of the whole damn book. But it was a high school football team that was giving their coach a lot of grief of why they had to do the practice exercises over and over and over.
And over.
They were winning. You know, they were winning. And so why did they have to do it? And he got annoyed with them, put them on a bus, and took them to, you know, a place locally where one of the very famous professional football teams was practicing. And they got there, and those guys who get paid the big bucks were doing the same thing, you know, the same exercises over. Every time we went out to practice, they did those. And it reminds me of that back to the bar, you know, you go to the bar in ballet, you just do that stuff first, because you have to keep that in order, or, you know, it'll all, it's not that it'll all fall apart, but it'll all fall apart, you know. And so that, I think, is the obsessive vigilance to make sure you're taking care of all of that, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah, doing it over and over and over again. Oh, I read this yesterday. I said this yesterday. I was grateful yesterday. Why do I have to do it today? Because we do.
Yeah.
That's it. I love it. I love that you had a football story. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's the only one I have. That's the only thing I know about football. I know nothing else.
Well, I have a football story.
Cool. Oh, really?
I do. I You'll laugh. But I haven't thought of this for years, but because we're talking about football. My cousin was really, really good friends with some famous guy on an LA football team. I don't know what team it was. It might have been a college team, like the USC team or something. But anyway, I was a kid, and he managed to get me a jersey from one of the players. And I wore that jersey. I mean, it was like a nightgown on me. But I wore that jersey for a long time as my nightshirt.
Oh,
awesome.
That's so cute. Maybe we should get ourselves some jerseys for the gathering or
something.
Oh,
that would be kind of
gathering
cool.
Gathering jerseys.
Mine is going to say 1%.
1% of the 20%.
Yep.
You're 1% of the 20%. That's right. All right.
I keep thinking about that.
But
you know, it's really wonderful because you know we're not off topic at all because this is precisely how to, and this is a huge learning lesson for me tonight. It's precisely how you say, but if we're so spiritual, how do we incorporate that into everyday life? And this entire discussion has been the purest example of that.
Exactly. It's everywhere. God is everywhere showing us all the different ways that we can do the things that we need to do to understand and act and behave as if we are God. So, yes. Cool. Wait, I'm rejoicing. My hands are in the air.
Reject.
Okay. Reject. That's a great, great happy dance.
All right. Thank you, guys. It's so fun to be on Shift Passions with you guys. Thank you so much.
It is.
Have fun.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.